Hi, it's Veronica, and this is the Step In Man podcast. I'm a relationship coach, and this show is basically about everything. Lots of topics in one podcast, so I hope you enjoy it.
Hi, Brent. I have a really lovely Brent Crandall here, and you are the author of a really lovely book, Born to Ukraine, Opposite Titus, The Ridiculous Family Love Story.
Yeah, and you pronounced it right. That's not easy. Yeah, opposite Titus.
Yeah, you know what? My dyslexic brain, when I saw it, I was like, oh no. And I watched one of your reels on Instagram, I think three times, and it's like, okay, I get it now, you know. But you know what? I really love your book because there are not so many books for blended families. They are like fun, and they are not trying to over explain the, you know, what is blended family or what is being a stepmom or stepparent or co-parent. And your book is just, it's lovely, it's funny, it's silly, and yet it is about creating ridiculous family love story, which I love because there is no, you know, like blended family love story. No, it's about the family. So what inspired you to write this book?
Wow. Well, first of all, that feedback is, I'm going to be floating around it. That means so much. Thank you so much for saying that. And I'm glad you felt that way. I was the inspiration for this book. I guess, you know, like to be an author in the first place, you know, for children's literature, children's books, that's been kind of on the back burner for a while now. That's been something I really wanted to do. And I started a different book that's I'm still working on. And but this one kind of popped to the head of the line. I was hanging out with my daughter and we were going somewhere and we started kind of just joking around with each other. And we talked about how, you know, how dads can be silly. And we came up with this idea of a dad who had opposite Titus. And so he does everything opposite. Like he takes his daughter to school on the weekends instead of on weekdays. And he wears a tuxedo when he goes to the pool. And he calls to set up play dates. He calls on a banana phone and in the middle of the night. And it doesn't really work out at first. So like it kind of happened quickly to like for this idea to kind of take root. And it kind of spoke to a value that's been kind of developing for me personally and for my family is just this idea that we can be who we are and embrace who we are and love who we are unapologetically, even if what we are isn't exactly what we plan necessarily, or if it just isn't what everybody else expects. Especially in that case, you know, like I kind of have disdain for trying to be like something else. And really it's all we can do is be who we are, you know? And so I was just thinking, you know, like this is a silly idea that my daughter and I were talking about. I decided to develop it and it really kind of in the end of it embodied some core values that I've got for myself and for my family. And, you know, and what you said meant a lot about how it wasn't like hitting you over the head with a blended family theme. Because you know, that wasn't the goal to like write a book. I'm a psychologist and I work with families all the time, but you know, helping families of all types. But I wasn't trying to write like a psychologist book. I was trying to write a fun family book. And yeah, so I hope this can be that for, you know, blended families and other families that look, you know, not like whatever standard is out there for how families are supposed to be.
Exactly. No, you're completely right. It's you know, the book is just so good because it's silly. And like you said, you came up with these ideas with your daughter. And I love it. I really, really love it because sometimes there are so many children's books out there. I see it every time I go to the library with my little one who's three. And he's like, you know, there's so much to choose from. But it's sometimes hard to find a good, silly book that you can laugh at and you can kind of like it will create a bridge for more conversations, for more ideas. And I could see like, yeah, my little one is a bit too little for your book right now. But I can see that he's like, oh, I think I can introduce it really soon and see what happens. But in a way, like the bedtime or reading, it's so important for families. And I don't know how it's, you know, with a toddler, sometimes reading the bedtime story with a toddler, I really don't know if it gets any easier later on. It's just like, and this and that, and can you please focus on that book a little bit? You know, sometimes the bedtime stories are at the end of the day when parents are tired, and sometimes you just want to go through the book and put it, you know, there are days when we, my and my husband, are like, yeah, we are silly and we're reading book and we're loving it. And there are some days you're just like, can we just put him in the bed now?
Yeah, there are some children's books I've probably read like literally 100 times, you know, like yeah. My daughter was just like fixated on for a certain age of her life. And so I read like Pout Pout Fish. I don't know if you know that book, but I read that 8 million times. And then I love There's a Monster at the End of This Book. So I read that one a bunch. So you have to like make it entertaining for yourself, right? Like, oh, yeah. Otherwise we're going to go nuts, you know?
But that's about your book. It's like seeing these ideas when dad is doing the opposite. What he said, he sends his daughter to school at the weekend, and it's brilliant. I was laughing so much. I was like, I kind of like that idea. You know, it's like, this should be optional for schools to do that. But I can see how we could create more ideas, you know, with my little one. And like, so like, what else we could do? What else, you know, we could do the other way around? And it kind of learning to be fun and maybe kind of breaking the rules a little bit, or the standards, or, you know, stereotypes. I say, yeah, going to swimming pool and tuxedo. Okay, that's probably a health and safety issue right there. But, but, you know, again, you need to learn how to swim, you know, how to swim dressed. That's what they're doing now at schools, swimming schools. And
oh, yeah, for like survival skills or safety skills, right?
Oh, they love, they teach us, okay, this is completely out of topic, but they apparently were teaching kids here in the UK to swim in pajamas.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was a Boy Scout growing up, and they made me jump in the pool with all my clothes on and then try and use my pants to like inflate them. And I was thinking, man, I don't know if this would help me survive or make me die faster. You know, this doesn't seem to be healthy. But I had to do that to get a merit badge when I was a kid. And I hadn't thought of that thought forever until you just said that kids are jumping in with their pajamas.
See, I can see like your book can bring the memories back. Yeah, in the UK, swimming in pajamas. But there you go. Survival skills right there. And so what the reading or kind of like, you know, book time means to you and your family?
Yeah, that question like really touches on what you were saying earlier too. It's like, and what you kind of prompted. I've read some of these like early childhood books like over and over and over, because it's like, you know, I let her choose what she was going to read, but we would read 2 books at night, you know? And so because she would choose, I think that gave her a little bit of autonomy and she felt empowered. And so, you know, that maybe made her a little bit more engaged when I was reading it, you know? And if she started to get a little distracted, I'd say, well, you picked this book. Do you still want to read it? Or do you want to pick a different book? You know? And, you know, that would be an option. You know, we would switch books if she wanted. But to make it interesting for her, you know, toddlers are not known for their concentration skills. And also to make it, you know, I am not known for my concentration skills at all either. So I had to like make it interesting. So I really made it time to be silly with her. And so I would do voices, a lot of voices, and I would like read it with different intonation. And I don't know, I would just try and make it new when I was reading it, so I wouldn't be, you know, because it is the end of the day, but this is like our last time for the day together. You know, we're closing out the day. And so, and you know, it's bedtime is when we would do this. So she was tired. So that took a little bit of the kind of distraction out of her a little bit. You know, we did some rocking in the rocking chair, and you know, like she would have a bath. And so it was like, you know, winding down. But then But then, you know, making it fun for me and hopefully for her too, with the voices and with, you know, trying to kind of play with the story, and making jokes as we go. I think that made that time maybe a little bit more, you know, connected, you know, and made that time a little bit more fun. And so that's the way I see books, is that they're, you know, they're time to connect and to have fun and to play with ideas. And so that's what's happened. You know, like I didn't really, I set out to make it silly, you know, but I didn't, I've been reading at schools and reading to, you know, different folks, you know, since it just recently came out. And at the schools, I'll start by asking what a novice it is and talking about that, you know, and then by the end, I'm like, okay, did you guys like it? And I said, what's the opposite of like two thumbs up? And then they'll put two thumbs down, and then they'll put my toes are down too. And then they start running with the idea of doing the opposite. And I think they really enjoy being able to break the rules in a safe way, you know, to do things differently. And so one of the librarians said that she contacted me after, and she said, the kids are playing opposite Titus when they come to the library or when they go to lunch. And so they're pretending that they do the opposite. And so they'll joke with each other and you know, do silly things, you know, like put their lunch bag on their head or whatever, you know, and just be silly and say, oh, I have opposititis. And, you know, so it's kind of given kids permission to be a little opposite, which that brings so much joy to me, because I, you know, that's, I think, a premise of the book is that we all have a little opposite in us. We all have a little itis of our own, and, you know, and it's something that we can own, you know, and not have to conceal or hide necessarily. It's something that we can kind of accept and be accepting of ourselves as we are. That's so anyways, that's how it, I don't know if I even answered your question. I kind of like went on a trip.
Like, honestly, I don't even know what was that question. But it's such a great feedback from the children, like doing the opposite and just having fun, and it is so pure and so beautiful. I'm so glad you got that kind of feedback from the kids, because and the librarian, because I can see how really kids these days can really easily, or even before, can really just, you know, start being safe and playing safe. And it's, you know, one thing is society, one is the parenting, and they sometimes suppress themselves because they don't want to embarrass themselves in front of friends, you know, and not even now talking about bullying or anything serious. It's just, I could see it with my stepdaughter. She's now 13, and I've been in her life since she was 4.5. And I could see how sometimes she just didn't want to be silly, or she didn't want us to be silly because, like, you know, how that would look like, or you know, that it would be embarrassing. But if you get them involved in the idea, you know, like with your book, it could be such a great, like, spark of that joy or silliness for the parents who are reading the books with children, because then they can, like, well, we could do a opposite right now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can see that can break some children's, you know, I don't like calling kids shy. I'm like really, really careful about, and don't call my child shy, or even when I'm like, oh, he's just shy. It's like, no. It's like, no. But because I could see what it did to my stepdaughter when she was little and when she was growing up. So now I'm really careful. It's like, no, we don't call children shy. Going a little bit around it, but
it's an oversimplification. I mean, your daughter is a full person, and for her to be kind of boxed into this label of shy, you know, kind of restricts her in terms of her creativity. You know, like jazz musicians will talk about how in order to play jazz, which is all improvisational, they have to learn the scales, and they learn the scales really well, and then they start to play with them, they start to expand them, you know, and that's where creativity lives, you know, and we can surprise ourselves. And if you overly ascribe a label to someone or to a family or, you know, to whomever, or to a role, then you restrict their ability to be genuine, to be authentic, which is one of the great joys of life. I mean, that, you know, that is a big cost. I like your reaction to that idea of people being, you know, constricted to either being shy or not I mean, the research that they have on introverts and extroverts shows that it's not dichotomous like we talk about it. You know, everybody's on a scale, and most of us are a mix. You know, it's like a bell curve, and most of us are somewhere in the middle of a combination of introversion and extroversion as a personality trait. So let's not tell people they have to be one way, because it's not true.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I can imagine with little kids, they come to the new place full of grown-ups, or even if there's just two grown-ups, they are what, like four times taller than the child, and they're suddenly in his or her face, and the kid just, you know, pulls back and like, oh, he's just shy. And it's like, how would you feel if two giants would come to you, put a face in your face, and it's like, you would not be like, ha ha ha, you know, you will back off as well. Or you just don't go to strangers. Like they're expecting children to talk to the grown-ups straight away. You know, not everyone, obviously, but some they're expecting, it's like, how would you feel like if a stranger would just come to you on the street and start talking to you? You're like, like, what? And you're, hold on, do we know each other? Or like, who are you? You know, you will kind of step back. So putting the pressure on the kids, like, oh, you shy, or you know, confident. I find it really, like, nah, you don't do it in my presence. I'm like,
yeah, and when I'm out there, don't do it either. Yeah, it's probably a reflection of an adult who's trying to connect or wants to connect and doesn't know how, and then blames the child for it. You know, that's probably more likely the case in those situations, that the, you know, that they want to be able to connect with that child and they don't know how, and so they need more skills. But it certainly isn't okay to put that responsibility on the child instead of, you know, being creative in their own way of connecting and finding different ways to connect.
Yeah, they probably should do the opposite of what they're thinking they should be doing.
yeah, totally.
You know, I really enjoyed the book. And when I saw it's by a beautiful illustration, everything. And I kind of saw it really looks, the main character, obviously, is really much you, or looking like you and your daughter. But I was like, it kind of looks like my husband and my stepdaughter. Like, really? Because you're quite similar. And I could see it. The love story you are explaining in that book is basically let's call it stepmom, you know, or the new girlfriend, just helping the dad to kind of embrace it, to embrace the oppositeitis, and just kind of like be with it instead of you know, like suppress it or ruin it or stop it. It's just they kind of work together. And I really love that love story, how, and I don't think that it was intention, I don't know if that was intention, but for example, when I met my husband, he was, even when he was proposing, he had his, like, I was a broken man. And he proposed on the stage in the theater. It was big, and he had a speech ready. And then obviously he got nervous, so he kept repeating that he was a broken man before he met me. And then I kind of fixed him, or I helped him to understand love. And that kind of, like, I kind of feel it from your book, how, and that's, how I said, it's not probably the intention, or it wasn't the intention, but it's even some, like, single dads can see it as like, there is, you know, the broken part of the separation or divorce or whatever was that. And then there is the love in the future. And it can start from being broken a little bit. You know, kind of being like broken, there's something. And then the woman, you know, the new partner comes in the life and just helps and is there and support. And it again, like with the books, we sometimes make it, you know, the meanings. We find a new meanings in the books. Even the author didn't make any of it, but we kind of connect with the books different ways.
Oh, yeah. No, I love your interpretation of that. That's beautiful. So I love that.
Yeah, and I was like, when I was reading, and I was like, that's kind of like my broken man.
Oh, that is so lovely, like to see that theme. I mean, if I create anything in any of my endeavors in this world, you know, while I'm alive, if I do something that kind of promotes the idea of unconditional positive regard, you know, and unconditional love, it, you know, then that would be a life well spent, you know. And so if that's what you're taking from it, I'm touched, you know, that that is how it felt to you. And I, you know, I hope so. It, you know, families that are blended and have gone through the upheaval of a divorce or separation or whatever it is that led to the change in the family, that change is usually not easy. You know, it's not what people planned, and it's change. Change is hard in generally, even positive change is hard, but like that kind of change that's unexpected. And so like when you were talking about how kids in blended families might sometimes need, like it might be kind of scary to have to do the opposites, you know, there is kind of, when you go through something difficult or even for some people traumatic, you need predictability and you need control. You know, those are two big principles, because when those changes happen, those are the two things that are taken away. So being able to have predictability and control becomes a bit of a crutch, and it's a sign of healing, I think, when you can make sure you have those things in your life, but also find ways to play with it and to expand it and to find a different way of loving and living. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're saying. And I just think that's lovely. And I'll point out that the stepmom figure in the story maybe is really good at understanding opposititis of the dad. And maybe this is true for you, Veronica. Maybe this is part of why you showed him how to love again and in a different way. But because she has synonymitis, so she says synonyms and she can't help it. And so she kind of understands, she's got her own itis, her own thing. And I think that's probably true of all of us, right? That hopefully we can be aware and understand our own challenges to be accepting of other people's challenges. So I think what you're touching on is just really a lovely theme and topic of life, you know? So thank you for saying that.
No, you're very welcome. And it's like everyone comes to relationship with some diagnosis.
Yeah.
I wish mine wasn't just saying cinnamons.
What's that? Yours wasn't just saying cinnamons.
I wish mine was just so simple as the correct
Yeah. Yeah, I did oversimplify, you know, our imperfection a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I love it because it's something I think, as I said, we all can learn from, that, you know, just accepting the differences, but learning from it and talking about it, you know. And now we can, I think I'm making your book sounds really serious. And
I love what you're saying. I mean, you can keep going. What you're saying makes it sound beautiful to me. I'm like very flattered. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
But we see, like, kids will see, like, oh, let's do silly things in that book. And then parents see something else in it. And I think that's what is, you know, when it's a really good children book, then it's like you both can get something out of it. Maybe completely different things. But you find it like heartwarming, or just you're learning from it. And not every book does it. I mean, sometimes you go through the children books and then you read it and it's like, well, that was just no good at all. <You know? laughs> Or it's yeah. Just like, oh, that was good, but no. But lately, like my little one has been obsessed with the book. Now we return it. About a girl with, and it was way older kid's book, but he loved it because it was about a dog. But unfortunately, it was about a girl who lost her legs one by one through the book. Mm. And then I was just reading and I was like, oh no, I need to make it like a little bit appropriate for him. Mm. But at the same time, I do need to explain why she's having these prosthetic legs, like, you know, at the end of the book.
Yeah.
And it taught me a lot. And like I said, like the kids see something else in that book than I do. Mm. And I can't wait to start reading your book with my little one. I think you're introducing really soon, and see what happens and see his reaction, because yeah, that would be quite sweet to see what he will come up with.
Oh, that makes me feel so happy. And yeah, I hope that he enjoys it. And part of what I'm thinking about as I'm listening to these points that you're making is just, so, you know, the other hats that I wear, like I said, I'm a psychologist and I do research, and I've like published a book to help therapists do therapy for children who are depressed and adolescents who are depressed. And I've written research articles, and that type of writing is very specific and not fun. It's rewarding in other ways, but it's not fun. And so I am really like happy to be able to do fun writing, and I've been doing more of that now. And as I, you know, I have this research background, you know, like being very empirical and whatever, but I'm more and more impacted by this idea that narrative is our most ancient and most effective form of communication, that we can share so much and so much like information, but also so much depth in the form of stories and narrative. And so like, as you're talking, I'm just thinking about how you took things that were personally relevant for you from this story, things that, you know, I wasn't even conscious of maybe, you know, so, but very much adjacent to the things that I was experiencing or thinking about when I was writing it. And I just think that that's such a beautiful thing about humanity, that we share versus like, or excuse me, by way of stories, you know, that stories is really a very kind of, it's almost magical the way that we share information that way. It's not empirical. It's rich and subjective and very nuanced for each person, individualized. And I think that that's really, you know, like one of the beautiful things and why I think I wanted to be in this arena. I grew up reading, I don't know if you know Shel Silverstein. He wrote a bunch of poems like The Light in the Attic and Where the Sidewalk Ends and The Giving Tree. And I was in a second grade class where we had like this frenzy of energy around Shel Silverstein. So everybody started memorizing his poems, and then they'd get up in front of the class and recite poems. This was second grade, and I'm like old now, but that's what I remember most about that year of my life. And so then when I got to read that to my daughter, and we got to have family time, you know, with my partner, and we, you know, would read those things together, and she started memorizing them or being interested in them like I was. You know, I still had my old copies, but they're kind of treasured. So I bought her copy so that she could have her own that she could treasure. And then there was also Lewis Sacker, who wrote Holes, is his most famous book. But the ones that I've read most are the Sideways Stories from Wayside School. Mm-hmm. And we are just like, we love those books. For my daughter's birthday, we got a cake that has one of the taglines. There's like dead rats are always trying to find their way into the classroom. It's like this ridiculous storyline that he wrote. And so she loved the book so much, we put a like rat with like X's on his eyes on a cake. And then it said, "Happy birthday, you old windbag." And it was her favorite thing ever. Aww. And I know it sounds like I'm a horrible parent, so please don't judge me. She freaking loved it. It was so fun. And so I sent, Lewis Sacker had a way to like reach out to him. And so I sent him a picture of the cake and told him, you know, how much we adore his work. And he responded, and it just like made my life, you know, cause I had been a fan of his since I was in second grade. And, you know, there's just so much power there. And none of the research articles I wrote are going to have that kind of influence in the world. None of those things that I've done otherwise are going to have someone saying that, you know, like this message of love and rebuilding love and finding love in a different way, healthier way, you know, that's not what they're for, but children's books can do that. Yeah. I just think that's amazing. So I'm sorry to be kind of long-winded, but you made me kind of reflect on that in a way that is very fulfilling. I just wanted to share the kind of gratitude I'm feeling by hearing you talk about this, you know, and it's kind of hitting me deep. So.
Oh, so sweet. That's so sweet. So do you have any plans for more books?
Yeah. Yes, I have been writing. The book that I was working on before, I'm still working on it. It's about, I worked at a summer camp growing up in Irvine. It was called Camp Fraser. And it used to be a drive-through safari experience where there'd be animals out and you'd drive your car, but the animals would escape and cars would get damaged. So they closed it down and they used those structures for a summer camp. And so I worked at the ropes course at that summer camp for years and years. And now it's in Irvine, California, which is like a suburbia to the max. It's like, it's just everything kind of gets turned into homes. And that place where the safari used to be, and now, and then the summer camp, it's now townhomes. It's just townhomes. And the whole place was scratched. And it's so sad to me to drive on the 5 freeway in California and see all these townhomes in this place that was so full of magic for me growing up and for the kids that went there. And so I'm writing the story of, there was a famous lion there. His name is Fraser the Lion. So I'm writing the story of how he ended up in Irvine, California. And he's got a very interesting story. So I'm writing that. And then I'm writing the follow-up to Opposite Titus. There's a follow-up coming for that. And so, yeah, so I'm working on those things and it's just so fun, you know. This was the kind of thing where, like, if anybody read it, I would be thrilled. And, I just kind of needed to write it for my sake, for our family's sake. And I'm so happy that I get to keep working like that, you know, because it's just so fun to do. So, yeah, thank you for asking. Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
That's amazing. And I will be adding, by the way, links to your website and books on Amazon, like the US.UK. In the descriptions of either YouTube or a podcast, so we all can find Brent really easily. You can just go to the descriptions after, and yeah, to find you and your book, because yeah, it's a good one. It's a really, really good one.
Oh, thank you so much, Veronica. That's so nice of you,
Brent. It was my pleasure to having you and talking to you again. And let me know when you finish another book so we can have you here again.
Oh, that's so nice of you. Okay, I'll take you up on that. Sounds like a deal. Thank you so much, Veronica. It's such a pleasure to be talking with you. And thank you for what you said about the book. I'm going to be floating around the next month about that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay, we'll just...